of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
Hi, this is John Amundson. I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychology Association of Alberta. The theme today is Christmas, and I will get into the reason, the way I've gone about this theme in a minute, but I want to tell you two stories about this singer, Bing Crosby. Bing Crosby was of the crooner tradition, which was very big last century, and especially into the mid-century in the United States. We still see it in people like Michael Bublé. Nonetheless, there are two stories. The first is, my father was a veteran of the Second World War, and he was in the Navy, and he was on a ship called a landing ship tanker, LST, not LSD, LST. And these ships were used to transport large vehicles onto receiving beaches, that is, beaches that were appropriately available to bring these huge ships in. They drop a off ramp, and they would drive out tanks and trucks and all sorts of things. For this reason, they were flat bottom, and the flat bottom allowed them to slip in to shallower water. They had to be, the beaches had to be appropriate, and then they could unload. Well, they're very dangerous ships in the ocean because a flat bottom is much more respondent to currents, waves, wind, and all of those kinds of things. So they were a couple of times they were in very dangerous weather in the Pacific and also in the Caribbean. And my dad said what they would do is the ship would start to pitch, and you know, all around them other ships were going down, and they would say, everybody in quarters, and they put this song on. A little aside is, this song was part of World War II. It was a song that for people in the Pacific. So soldiers and sailors dispatched to the Pacific were dreaming of a white Christmas, the idea of being able to return home to that tradition. But he said they'd put this on his record, of course, and he said the record would go, I'm dreaming of, and then the ship would pitch, and it'd go, right? And then the guy would, they had some poor petty, some junior officer who would sit and then put it back on, and they go, just like the one I used to, right, as the ship would pitch. The second story is about a patient I had. I'm going to go quick. Is a patient I had, and her family ran a fishing camp in Nova Scotia, and it was a fishing camp for the rich and famous. And Bing Crosby came there, and he came there because he liked to fish, and they took him up fishing. And so she was around the camp, and she was a little one. She was like 5, 6 years old, walking around the camp, and he took a liking to her. And so the next day when the guide, was going to take Bing Crosby out fishing, she came and said, I want to go. And the guy said, no, you can't. And Bing Crosby said, oh, bring the little one along. So he was rowing, paddling this boat, whatever, however he moved the boat, up this beautiful Nova Scotian waterway, and Bing Crosby just started to sing spontaneously, gorgeous, you know, just singing some song. And as he was finishing the song, she says, I announce, that's enough, no more singing. I mean, here's Bing Crosby, guys, people paid hundreds, would be equivalent to $1,000 to hear, and she told him to shut up. All right, so let me get into the podcast today and tell you a little bit about what the theme is. What I did is I went to APA Gold, and I searched Christmas, and I searched, and you go in order from the most recent publications to later. And I only went through the first 50 that had anything to do with Christmas. And I picked out ones that I think are kind of interesting and cute. All right, so the first one I want to introduce you to is in the journal Social Psychology and Personality Science. Unfortunately, they only give you the abstract. You have to then order these. So what I was doing was taking from the abstract, and they talked about the increase in consumption over the holiday seasons, and they wanted to look at this phenomenon from the point of view of the big five personality traits. In other words, the title of the article is, who are the Stooges? There were three, eh? Who are the Scrooges? Personality predicts holiday spending. And they found that the big three were conscientiousness, neuroticism, and extroversion. And the relationship with neuroticism persists after accounting for possible co-founders, including income and demographics. In other words, people high in neuroticism tended to, yep, you guessed it, be more inclined to Scroogeism. They didn't go into enough details in the abstract to pick these other ones out, but I think we can kind of generalize and say conscientious and extroverted are the ones that are probably going to feel compelled to engage in the demanding behaviors, the demands associated with Christmas behavior. In a second really interesting study that came out of Europe, I think out of France, they were looking at brand consumption in children. So brand consumption. And they found that children's TV, when they were watching children's TV, there were brands, Playmobil, Barbie, Lego, those kinds of things pop up. And they found that they were looking at letters, the wish list, the letters that they were sending. They have Le Poste, I believe this is in France, maybe it's in Italy. They have a website where you can send in holiday letters to Santa or Christmas letters to Santa, and the kids were doing this. And they found that the kids would send these in, and in half of the Christmas wish list, in half, one of the 10 leading brands is mentioned. So the children are picking up from TV the actual brand that they want. They say this seems to peak between the ages of 7 and 9. And then a secondary issue on this is that parents are influenced by this. So the children watch, they see this, and then parents may have no idea exactly what the toy is, but they'll say, well, there's something about Baby Yoda, for example. All right, in another article, it was it's a dissertation, Abstracts International. What they do when your dissertation is published, they will take your abstract and publish it in Dissertations International. And this one is a really interesting one because it's called Christmas Monsters, the Philadelphia Parade of Spirits in Context. Some of you may know the concept of Krumpaschlaf. Krumpas is a figure in the European Christmas holiday personified, sadly, in the Netherlands by blackface. But other places, just this, it's a man, but a haggish, horrible, witchery sort of man that comes through the villages. In Philadelphia, they have a parade of Krumplas, and it's the one for the differentiation between naughty and nice. So they come to take children, and parents have used it traditionally as a form of symbolic reference relative to in punishment. So Krumpas is going to get you. There's been a lot of criticism about this, and especially again in this use of blackface and the personification of Krumpas as the other. However, the Philadelphia Parade and parades in Portland, Oregon, and LA, and all that. This guy argues that they are they're being recontextualized in the sense of American culture. And he in his dissertation he talks about it being a way of critiquing the commercialism of the holiday season. The idea of having a meaning in the holiday season of reflection, recollection, and reappraisal of oneself and one's relationship with others, as opposed to just the commercialization of Christmas that is so characteristic in what he calls capitalist societies and capitalist economies. So that's kind of neat. He's arguing for the presence of Krumpas as a way to decontextualize Christmas. More morbidly, in returning to the Netherlands, there was a study that looked at suicide, and they were looking at suicide rate around Christmas, and they said there's an substantial increase on January 1st, that in other words, Christmas isn't it, but it's coming into the new year. It occurred more than twice as often in men than in women. There's a springtime peak in suicide incidents and a trough at Christmas. In other words, there are seasonal transitions where suicide, we already knew this through the research, elderly are more likely at those times, and that it is into January, the beginning of January and the spring, where suicide is greater. It isn't this proverbial thing, Christmas is coming and there's probably going to be no Santa Claus for me. It's after that. Going back to Europe, I want to talk about something that I was familiar with, and also I found this research on. It's called Nostalgia, Irony, and Collectivity in Late Modern Culture, the Ritual of Watching the Disney Christmas Show in Scandinavia. Now, in Sweden, there is a there's a phenomenon that is unusual. Look it up. Look up Nikonofikanen, I think, is a Swedish word for Donald Duck. And there's a show that the Swedes all set everything down, and they watch this Disney cartoon about Donald Duck. I have a friend, and he's Swedish, and we talked about this, and he just busted up. He said, yeah. He said, nobody kind of knows why. It just became something everybody does collectively on that day. And so look up Scrooge McDuck or Donald Duck, a Sweden holiday, and you can find some stuff on that. They talk about it in three ways. This is a discursive article, not a research one. And they look at the collective characteristics of this nostalgia. That the idea when you go to, you have this ritual, there's a nostalgic collectivism that people long for. And again, we've talked about this in other podcasts. This is part of Trump's Make America Great Again or whatever. And it's like, great for who and what was great and on and on and on. But there's this longing, nostalgic longing for some place other than the place that we're in. So I thought that was so cool. And again, I'd had some knowledge about it before finding the article. Which makes me feel maybe a little more clever. There was another article. It was called the Behavioral Ecology, and it was called Hiding Behavior in Christmas Tree Worms on Different Timescales. And I thought, oh my God, the Christmas trees, we bring them in, they've got worms, and the worms come out when it's dark or whatever. No, it wasn't about that at all. It's about in the natural ecology, there's this a bug called a Christmas tree worm, and it was just looking at the temporality of when it comes out and when it hides. So I couldn't use it. In an article in Applied Research in Quality of Life, that's the name of the journal, I guess, they were looking at subjective well-being at Christmas time because there's a sense, like there's a joke, you know, toy stores and circuses are not for children, meaning they raise a subjective feeling of pursuit of something desirable, which can never be fulfilled. So kids end up leaving the circus crying because they didn't get the special light saber. Lightsaber's not probably the best way, but some bauble that was for sale there are toy stores because they couldn't make their mind up buy everything. So what they found was that the Christmas period is related to a decrease in life satisfaction, emotional well-being. However, Christians, those with the highest degree of religiosity, are an exception to this pattern. So once again, I've argued that religiosity and belief has a certain advantage that many of us that don't have that don't have. In the journal Social Psychology, there was a really quick article that we'll all understand. It was called Bah Humbug, Unexpected Christmas Cards and the Reciprocity Norm. What's been discovered is that in previous research that when people receive a Christmas card that they didn't expect, even a Christmas card from sort of a stranger, meaning you've gone to a store, they have your address, they send it to you, that people, 20%, will reciprocate. However, online, in the experimental design, in the online, they found that only 2% would reciprocate in any way. All of a sudden, a Christmas card says, hey, I'm wishing you a happy holiday season from someone. You go, I don't know, who is that, right? Only 2% reciprocate. It makes sense because we have been conditioned to a large extent, to fear online communication and the setup that comes with that. In a final article review, this was again in Dissertation Abstracts, the title was At Least It's Not Christmas, a Qualitative Investigation of Rituals as Women's Work, and you can guess where this is going. The researcher looked at dialectic theory and structuration theory, performativity, and kinscripts. These are all discursive ways of investigation, and found that although that I'll read from the actual abstract, mothers believe that they see holiday rituals as meaningful value to the family. They also reported experiencing physical, emotional, mental distress in their efforts to make the ritual meaningful to their members of the family. And they say, well, I put pressure on ourselves, but in real, these expectations are discursively and indirectly communicated to them by family members. In other words, even though a person says, why do I put myself through this? I shouldn't work so hard. There is the subtle nuances in the environment that continue to nudge and encourage women and mothers in that direction. We'll let Bing Crosby march us out with this obscure Christmas carol that I actually like a lot, but you guys go ahead and listen and judge for yourselves.
and joining the fun of the jigs and reels. I'm handing you no blarney, the likes you've never known. It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.
Christmas in Killarney is wonderful to see.
Listen to my story and I'll take you back with me. The holly green, the ivy green, the prettiest picture you've ever seen.
It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home. It's nice, you know, to kiss your beau while cuddling under the mistletoe.
And Santa Claus, you know, of course, is one of the boys from home.
The door is always open, the neighbors pay a